you know, I don't know 100% for sure what the impact of climate is going to be. The scientists say that it's going to have a devastating impact, but I don't know for sure. But neither do you. Now, that makes this a risk. And what does a businessman do when they have a risk? I don't know I'm going to die next year, but I take out insurance in case I might. And we don't, and we have good reason to believe that climate requires it. And the insurance policy will simply clean up the air in the cities and prevent asthma and lung disease and stuff like that. So let's just take out the policy.
You're very inspiring, Dave. We've almost reached the end of our time, but you're so inspiring. I want to get on the next plane from Sydney and fly over to Washington, D.C. and work hand in hand with you to evoke this revolution. And I think we could do it. I do.
Well, I live at right in downtown D.C. now, and I'm 15 minutes from Reagan Airport, 45 minutes from Dulles. So I'll be looking for you. You can just knock on my door at midnight.
At any time, huh?
Yeah.
Dave, it's been
absolutely... We'll invite Arjun over to chaperone.
That's, and he can take us out to an Indian dinner.
Yeah. Well, there's a great Indian restaurant right around the corner from where I live.
Oh, yeah.
Even Arjun said it was the best he'd ever seen in D.C.
Well, that's very high praise from Arjun.
Yeah.
Yes. Well,
good to talk to you.
Yeah, good to talk to you, Dave.
So let me know when you're coming.
I'll see you soon.
All right. Bye-bye. Okay,
bye. My guest today on If You Love This Planet was David Freeman, who served as an advisor on energy and the environment to Presidents Johnson, Nixon and Carter. And unfortunately, I didn't get to ask him about President Nixon, which was on the tip of my tongue, but he talked so much and it was so fascinating that I couldn't interrupt to talk about President Nixon. Anyway, thanks for listening today, everyone. It's been great. A lot of fun and very inspiring. If you want to support us, go to ifyoulovethisplanet.org and please donate, because we have to keep going. We have to keep going. This is such an important radio program. Education is the key. As Jefferson said, an informed democracy will behave in a responsible fashion. This is about informing. Thanks for listening again. We'll be back with you next week with another fascinating show. Bye for now.
You've been listening to If You Love This Planet with Dr. Helen Caldicott. This program is broadcast on community radio across the United States, including our host station, KPFT Pacifica, Houston, Texas. This program is produced and engineered by Jazz Williams, co-produced by Scott Powell, and our publicity and outreach are coordinated by Amanda Bellerby. To listen to previous shows or to make a donation, go to our website, ifyoulovethisplanet.org.
And next up on Free Radio Santa Cruz, which is what you're listening to at 101.3 FM, it's Bathrob Spears Broadsides, a show I host. I'm Robert Norris. I'll be with you for the next 2 hours. We're going to be going through some interviews, as I usually do. Also, I'm going to be playing a special phone interview with T.J. Megalanes, who I understand founded or co-founded the Clean Team, which has been a matter of both public adulation and controversy recently. There's a lengthy article in Santa Cruz Patch, an interview with him by Jeremy Leonard, and a rather controversial video, which has been taken down and hopefully will be put up again. We'll be talking about all that at 6:30. So stay tuned. You can call in if you want and give us some updates on what's going on out there, particularly concerned with what's happening with poor and homeless people, at 831-427-3772. 427-3772. So, well, come on in and sit down, have a seat, and let's talk.
This is a story about one time when I went out looking for peace and justice. I was gone for over 20 minutes. Well, a good 20 minutes and 20 years, 30 years. Actually, I'm still out there. And it's a long road, and I've been roaming and rambling through the thickets and the brambles and looking for people. And I ran across a descendant, not of Thomas Jefferson, but of one of his never-freed love slaves. And she told me, Dave, well, in the course of social collapse, becomes necessary to change society, perhaps. Jobless and homeless, can't get no health care. Life isn't fair. Who do we know to help us sow the seeds of something better? Well, I met her. She wrote a letter. Here's what she said. We're the welfare mothers from New York City. We fight for our rights. We don't need your pity. But who are the ones who can help in this fight to set things right? Could they be hiding in plain sight? Well, we are the ones. Yes, we are the ones. We must get this done. Cause we are the ones. Who else?
Farm labor organizers committed blocks to the rescue. Takes on the soup and pickle people. Demanding respect for the pickle pickers, don't you know? Fair wages and treatment for the sis and bro. Grassroots global justice. Alianza Popular. What's a new system? What dreamers? Wait, that's how we make change. For a minute I forgot. Power for working people and those who have not. Indigenous environmental network somehow got this funny idea. People are in some way some part of some kind of environment around here. Third world majority says we not only have the right to know, we have the responsibility to be the media. Step it up and go. Don't you think that youth of color, queers, and other marginalized multitudes could do a better job of telling us what's going on than those bingos up at NPR with their Chatty Cathy attitudes? That's it. Chatty Cathy attitudes. We are the ones. Yes, we are the ones. We are the ones. Said you just gotta trust us. Got a big laugh from Jobs with Justice. We bailed out the rich. They got the bonuses. Did you see what I saw? I had drop jobs. We want our dignity back. Not to mention homes and jobs. They said the wheels of society are coming off train right straight ahead. Some of us have been there all along. Somebody somewhere doing something wrong. Undernourished children in an overnourished society. When we allow poverty to continue, that's a impropriety. Who cares about healthcare? We care. Who cares about immigrants? We all share. If money can move globally, so can people who have the habit to live nobly. Michigan Welfare Rights Organization fighting against privatization for affordable water rates like they did in Bolivia. And by the way, they want, if Bolivia can do it, Michigan can. If Bolivia can do it, Michigan can, Michigan can, Michigan can, Michigan can, Michigan can. Padres Unidos, defending Denver Latinos from education assassinos. Without the freedom to learn project, we got no freedom to earn prospect. We want no schoolhouse to jailhouse track. We want our dignity back. 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 Women in transition, out of Louisville, Kentucky. Do you think you get what you need by hoping? Maybe a little doping. No, you band together, stand together. Don't wait for their approval. You got to get up together against unjust child removal. World People's Economic Human Rights Campaign says we all have the right to do more than complain about healthcare, housing, education, and a living wage. It's all the rage. It's the new black. Supports the victims of NAFTA and welfare reform. We're sticking together. We're a perfect storm. We've been downsized and cancer-sized, but we may not be satisfied. We need power, which we can only get from the strength and perseverance of our 93 member organizations. I'll mention a few. Most I can't remember, because I ain't no cyborg. You can look it up at economichumanrights.org/members.
these sisters and brothers, Alexandria United taxi drivers in the hip-hop congress, sisters together ending poverty, step, Southsiders together organizing for power, stop, Toledo foreclosure defense league, Chupto, direct action welfare group, DAW, and don't forget the Mormons, for equality and social justice. Feminists of color working to end violence against women and communities of color through direct action and grassroots organizing. I'm going to go out on a limb and link them with the Indigenous Women's Network, with the Youth Cultural Arts Program and Sustainable Communities.
That was We Are the Ones, sung by Dave Lippman, also known as Wild Bill Bailout. And that's the last number on his CD, which I've kind of enjoyed playing. I didn't like him much a couple decades ago when I first heard him, but I think he's grown on me. That's Dave Lippman. So welcome to Bathroom Spears Broadsides. I'm off to a slow start, but... going to try to ramp up the pace here and get myself in gear. I wanted to mention a couple things before I begin. One is the I kind of keep an eye on certain committees on city council, not because they're doing anything particular or even doing anything good. Mostly it's the opposite these days, unfortunately. In fact, almost entirely the opposite. But the one committee, the Measure K committee, was one, actually the only committee that I know of, and there may be others that I'm unaware of, but it's the one that was created actually despite council indifference or opposition. It was created by Citizen Initiative back in 2006, and it was concerned with making sure the police department locally made marijuana enforcement, not just medical marijuana, but all marijuana enforcement for possession of adults or possession and use by adults in private, the lowest priority, the lowest enforcement priority. I always thought this was kind of half-assed, hokey measure, but hey, any port in a storm, any kind of minor step in the right direction, it's worth something, you would say. Though sometimes I dispute that and regard it as an attempt to avoid a bigger step. But let's just start with that. And in fact, it did lead to the attempt to get a stronger measure on the ballot in 2010, which didn't succeed. But similar measures in cities like Seattle and Oakland have cut down the rate of marijuana busts. Not in Santa Cruz. In Santa Cruz, the measure was hobbled from the start by action from the city attorney and the police department. It didn't want the Measure K Commission overseeing the police department's records on marijuana enforcement. And so that section was removed from the ordinance after it was voted by the voters, by consent with the person who fronted for the initiative. I think it was either Andrea Tischler or someone else in the group that did it. It was funded by out-of-city money, but it did pass by a significant percentage. And then it was staffed by, I think, well-meaning individuals who found the city council refused to assist them in any way in holding the police department accountable, or in having more frequent meetings, or in helping to publicize what they were doing, or in taking some kind of remedial action. Nothing. And so the chair and the vice chair resigned within a year or two after. First, the commission was very much delayed, then the chair and the vice chair resigned, and then it was stacked with people who, it's hard for me to say they were anti-marijuana people, but they certainly were pro-police people who were not terribly interested in keeping a critical and strong enforcement look at the Santa Cruz Police Department's behavior. And at least as of a couple years ago, marijuana arrests were rising, not falling. And there were numerous arrests that were done not as clearly as the lowest priority. They were done on private property. They were done, I think, in violation of Measure K, with no real response either from the Measure K Commission or the police department, Santa Cruz City Council, district attorney, any civil lawsuits, nothing. So the Measure K Commission became a kind of a moribund group. So, for instance, in the last, I wanted to find out what had happened. Whenever I would go to check what was going on, I would see posted in front of the city council offices notice that they couldn't have, it didn't have a quorum, so they couldn't meet. And since the commission only met twice a year, they weren't meeting much at all. So I wanted to find out when the last time this group, which is mandated, required to meet and pass, issue annual reports on marijuana enforcement and complaints about police around this issue, how often they actually met. So I talked to Scott Collins, who's was a staff person for this committee. And Scott has been unusually cooperative, and I want to commend him publicly for his help, unlike prior staff members, Tina Scholl, who are not have not been particularly helpful. In fact, I regard them, frankly, as acting against the best interests of the community that wanted to see Measure K implemented. But anyway, Scott got back to me, and he sent me the biannual reports that were created. I haven't even had a chance to look at them yet, and I'll hopefully be talking about them on Sunday. But the commission has only five members. Two members have not been appointed, and this is 4 months after the current election. Micah Posner's commission member and Don Lane's commission member, the two individuals you would think who might appoint people most concerned about making sure police respect the rights of people regarding marijuana, and who might have the most skepticism of the absurd, costly, and vicious drug war that continues to rage in our country in spite of the bogus claims that Santa Cruz is such a wonderful, tolerant community around this issue. But they haven't. Justice Tony Madrigal, for years, refused to appoint a member when he was commissioned on the city council, so these people have also declined. I don't know why, really. Maybe I'll call Micah Posner, who's quite accessible. He, and you know, to his credit, he comes on the air and answers questions and ask him why he hasn't appointed someone. I think I already suggested Craig Canada be appointed. Craig is a longtime activist, was previously homeless, a marijuana activist, who finally got housing and repeatedly abused by police, and concerned about the rights of people who are marijuana smokers, medical marijuana smokers, and perhaps, who knows, maybe even recreational marijuana smokers, but medical was his main focus. He has a very active website. He did a radio show, as I said, here on Free Radio for a while. He's something of a queen and a sort of a prima donna in some respects. No offense meant, that's just my interpretation of him as a person. But he's also very knowledgeable, very articulate, and outspoken, also quite sarcastic and quite ironic at times. And I think he would he'd make a good commission member. But Don Lane, of course, apparently wants nothing to do with him, and I don't know about Micah. I think he may have even been suggested to Micah, and Micah may have turned him down too. But the point is that both the seats are vacant. Not that it would make a hell of a lot of difference, because heading the chair is the head of the Santa Cruz Neighbors, Deborah Alston, who has been behind the election campaigns or supportive of the election campaigns of Lynn Robinson, I suspect also Pamela Comstock, some of the worst, most pro-drug war members of the Santa Cruz City Council. To put those people in there is, you know, the old foxes in the hen house approach, and it's, well, it tells you to some extent why we haven't heard anything from these groups, why quorums don't happen throughout the last year. When they do happen, there's no activity. So I'm going to attempt to get more information for you. I'm sorry, this is kind of a sort of an introductory report on this. I'm just really letting you know I have some information, and I will be able to sort it out and possibly get more to you on Sunday. Again, last year at the two meetings in July and December, there were no quorums. And because there were no quorums, they didn't vote on the minutes of the last meeting where there was a quorum prior to that, which was, I believe, in January of 2012, more than a year and a quarter ago. And those minutes are not being released until he gets permission from City Attorney John Barisone. So we don't even know what the hell is happening there. But maybe John will... well, I'm not going to make any predictions about our city attorney. So, other stuff that's been happening. Let me see if I can... check over my notes and give you a few more num-nums, so to speak. There is still some kind of minor establishment, or I should say, alternate press interest in the death and burial of the needle exchange program, which, as regular listeners know, was destroyed by City Council in closed session. When SOS, the Needle Exchange Volunteer Group, was forced to move from their Barson Street address in the city to the Emmeline Street area, where it's not clear to me whether they're still operating out of that or whether it's been completely taken over by the county. But in any case, a radical shift to the right has happened whereby there's no needle exchange, certainly no permanent site in the city, even though the site that this was happening at had no rise in crime, no rise in needles that were thrown away, no complaints from any great number of neighbors, just pressure from particular groups like Take Back Santa Cruz and the Clean Team and other right-wing anti-drug war pro-prohibition type groups. You thought Santa Cruz was a liberal town. No, not really, not in that regard, and not in terms of whom the city council listens to. And, you know, I got to give it to Take Back Santa Cruz. They're quite good at organizing, and they've been doing it for 5 or 6 years now, I guess since 2009, less 4 years, 5 years now. And they got two members, one member re-elected to the city council, Lynn Robinson, Pamela Comstock, the co-founder of Take Back Santa Cruz, elected. Other members appointed to city commissions. They are a politically powerful and influential group. More important, they have been able to mobilize people in the community with scare stories around needles, and crime, and homeless people, and the deaths of two police officers, let's not forget. And what about Sharon Collins? You know, this sort of thing. The essentially random shootings that have happened become their cause celebre, their red bloody flag that they run with, and successfully run with. And the Sentinel, of course, cheers them on. So do other sedulous conservative groups like the Downtown Association and the Chamber of Commerce and plenty of businesses throughout the town who put little support your local police signs in their windows, which frankly depresses me. because while I would like to certainly support public safety in Santa Cruz insofar as it concerns citizen awareness and prevention of assaults, murders, robberies, rapes, profiteering, abusive behavior toward classes of people, and so forth, I don't think that's what the police generally do. That's not where, what I see them doing most of. I see them engaged in drug war activity, at which two of them were shot dead. Actually, it wasn't two. That was not drug war activity. Sorry, that was domestic abuse, and so that was actually and actually worker abuse. So that was a positive thing they were doing. But a lot of the police activity that is going on is not, particularly around people that I'm concerned with. And you actually see this from police department's own figures, where a deputy chief, Steve Clark, came to the homelessness study session 3 weeks ago and was claiming, 41% of our calls are around homeless people. What he didn't, of course, tell you is that the issues that they're getting are not about any really real crimes against the people. They're open container, drug use, drug sales, recycling crime, sitting next to a building, jaywalking, and, of course, sleep crime. Illegal camping, which means survival camping. And so it's interesting that the police, the very figures of the stats of the police tend to bear out the huge and stupid expenses that are being spent on crimes largely created through input from the Santa Cruz Police Department and pressure from the Santa Cruz Police Department to give it more tools and greater power to essentially stop and interrogate homeless people, poor people, transients, whom they're probably much more comfortable going after than white-collar folks, established gangs, profiteers, people engaged in white-collar fraud, and so forth. So, I guess my concern here, and what we're going to be looking at shortly, or actually listening to shortly, is the impact of this kind of twisted focus on public policy. And I've talked about this a lot, and that's been a kind of a focus of what I've been playing for the last few programs. So, for instance, the Public Safety Committee, or Public Hysteria Committee, as I call it, I played a lot of that last show. And, you know, the measures are to essentially crack down on homeless people. And my response to the homeless community and the community supporting real justice and real safety and security for everybody, and not just a kind of a phony generated hysteria that scapegoats poor people in order to essentially create a political furor and political power for a group of people that properly complains it is left out of, it is ignored by the city council, and not even necessarily properly ignored. I mean, I don't agree with their issues. I think their stats are phony. I think the whole needle hysteria, as I mentioned, is phony, but they're the right to be heard, the right to have meaningful open discussions, access to city council, to have real input is an important thing. Now, in other words, a real democratic process. And that I think has never been the case in Santa Cruz that I know of, at least in terms for poor people, renters, and so forth. But when you get enough people behind you, they have to start at least acting like they're listening, and that's what these committees are all about. We have a caller. Let's see if our phones work. Yo, you're on free radio. Well, I thought you were on free radio. Try again, caller. Not sure if you're... We'll see. 427-3772 is the call-in number if you want to get in touch, and then we can talk. So anyway, the beginning of all this was that, well, you just have to wait because we're going to try again to hear our caller. Hi, are you on the air, caller? Can you hear me?
Robert, yes, I can.
Oh, right. Welcome to Free Radio.
Thank you. That wasn't me before, but after the missed call. I knew I could get right on.
Okay. How you doing?
I just wanted to make sure that you knew that it wasn't Sharon Collins that got murdered. It was Shannon.
You're right. Thank you.
And I appreciate your role in the community. I sure do.
Uh-huh.
And I also appreciate the perspective that you bring. And so I just wanted to call in and thank you.
Wow. Any thoughts? Do you disagree with anything you've heard, or do you have some extra thoughts on any reaction to any of it?
About what?
Oh, you know, the question of how do you feel? Do you feel safe, unsafe in the community, more safe than years ago, less safe? What's the story there?
I guess it's a little bit of everything because Santa Cruz is an interesting community, and we have had some over-the-top crime lately, and it does disconcert you, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I really don't appreciate the us versus them conversation that is the hot topic of most apps, like, I guess, in quotation, activist groups in town right now. I think that is a big disservice to what I'm sure, like, everybody's top goal is to be happy and be safe and make the planet a better place.
Mm-hmm. Are you employed yourself?
Yes, I am.
And is that a fairly secure employment, or is, I guess the question that really comes to my mind is, a number of folks that I think are concerned about the possibility of losing their employment. Is that a concern you have?
No, I've worked at the same place for over a decade. It's a nice, good local business.
Uh-huh. So you're okay. The business is doing well. It's not likely to go belly up.
No, it's fine, but like I do not have a bank account. Uh-huh. I do not have any bills that I pay in. I pay rent.
Mm-hmm.
And I pay my, you know, cell phone bill to keep in touch.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm glad you do. Otherwise, you wouldn't be calling in. But how about your rent? Is your rent rising? Is it staying stable? How's that?
You know, it's about $700.
And are you, the people you know, are they in pretty good shape, or is there an economic crisis? I know for many people I know there's an economic crisis, but that's not necessarily the case for everyone, of course.
Yeah, you hang out with a lot of people, Robert. A lot of people that I don't have, like, I don't seek them out.
Uh-huh.
I'm sure, you know what I mean? Like, you are well known to go out and ask people how things are going in the homeless community. And I think that's just great.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I really wish that I could do some of that too.
Yeah.
But honestly, as a, you know, as a woman and as, like, with things that have been going in the world the way it is, like, it's not the safest route. You know, just because I'm curious to see how everybody's doing, like, I can't go out there and just say, how's everybody doing?
Have you had bad experiences yourself? Or are you
just... Yes, I have.
Okay.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's a lot of crazy people in this town.
Uh-huh. And we're talking about just feeling uncomfortable, or are you actually situations where you felt physically threatened?
Not only, yeah. I mean, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. People have threatened me many times. I work in downtown. They've threatened me many times. And they're kooks. And I don't know how to, you know,
how to address
I don't
that.
Want to put them into, label them like, oh, they're just a homeless crazy person, but they are.
What's
you know
what
I mean?
Describe the last time that happened to you and where and how that went down.
Well, I'm not going to tell you where, but, you know, they just roll into the business and they'll just anti-social behavior. You know, you can't it doesn't mean, it doesn't matter to, like, tell you the specifics, but definitely, like, antisocial behavior, either on meth or just mentally disturbed.
By antisocial behavior, you mean behavior that destroys property, or just behavior that's sort of alarming to look at, or behavior that discourages customers?
Behavior like rolling in through the front door of the business and pointing your finger like a gun and going, pew, 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 you know? You can't do that. You can't walk through where I work and do that to my customers.
Mm-hmm.
That's one occasion. Mm-hmm. We have other people that come and, right on the periphery of the business will talk to themselves, like, just like, so intensely, like having this conversation with themselves,
mm-hmm.
that it's disturbing to watch.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know why. I mean, it kind of scares me because it's like, what is this person going to do?
Hmm. Okay. Go ahead.
Well, and so you call the cops, right?
I probably wouldn't, but again, I'm not in your position.
You wouldn't, because you don't work at a business like that.
I mean, I'm not in a fixed location, so if somebody were really bothering me over a period of time, it depends on whether I feel what they're doing is likely to threaten me, or whether it just, it's something that, I find bizarre and dysfunctional.
Well, that is a very small, your own feeling.
Yeah, yeah, for
and
sure.
And so I do want to put out there that, I see all sides of this conversation that is going on in mm-hmm. Santa Cruz right now
mm-hmm.
with, the compassionate people versus the people that, are more like families first, and we're not going to stand for needles on our streets or whatever. I can understand why that conversation is happening.
I don't think anybody favors needles on the streets. The question is whether you think getting rid of needle exchange is going to cut back needles on the streets. I mean, or if you feel the current drug war policies are actually going to do anything about
it or make
it worse.
I'm with you on that, Robert, for sure.
Yeah, it's interesting. Some of the people who are on the clean team, and I'm about to play that T.J. Magallanes interview that I did a few days ago, one of the guys who started the clean team, if not the founder, he's had very strong views about the importance of medicalizing drug treatment. I mean, you can scream all you want to about needles and such, but if you don't have drug treatment programs, if you don't have places to go where people can deal with this issue, then you're essentially using it for a political purpose to raise up fear, and that has always been a concern of mine whenever this issue comes up.
Well, I just hope that we can all gather together and get over our small differences and focus on the bigger fish, which is to destroy capitalism, corporate capitalism.
Am I talking to a commie here? Are you one of them commies I've heard of?
Know what I mean, Robert.
Yeah, I think so. Well, listen.
Read an Adbusters and play Kill Cap. That's all I got to say.
I remember Adbusters. Yeah, thanks. Well, thanks for calling. You want to give us your first name?
Oh. No, thanks.
Okay. Thank you for calling in anyway.
Take care, man.
Bye-bye. And you are tuned to Free Radio 101.3 FM. Amazing. An actual caller. Thank you, caller, for calling in. I am now going to turn, as promised, because it's sort of on the schedule. I put it up on the Internet on a story I wrote, and actually comments I've made on other people's stories. An interview with T.J. Magallanes, who you can also find online on the Santa Cruz Patch website, which did a long piece, an interview by Jeremy Leonard. And as I mentioned before, and some of you already know, been following this issue, Santa Cruz Patch there was a video posted on Jeremy's website that he took when he went out with the clean team and on one of their expeditions and videoed one of the clean team rather seriously harassing a sleeping homeless person who was trying to stay under his blankets as the team sort of marched around him and abused him and denounced him and so forth. And there was a lot of discussion on the website, and we're going to hear what TJ had to say, not about so much this video, but about the issues he raises in the story that accompanies the video, which have to do with why he left Santa Cruz, what happened with the group, the Clean Team, which he claims was taken over by another group called Take Back Santa Cruz. And you'll also hear a lot of my ranting and raving, which kind of goes along with the show. So let's go straight to that interview.
Santa Cruz, it's got awful expensive to live, and what basketball team and all this stuff.
Having a little problem here because I thought we were at the beginning of it, but we are not quite, so I'm going to take one of my famous musical breaks, and then we'll come back to this interview very shortly and get into it. So let's do that.
What this country is coming to, I sure would like to know. If we don't do something by and by, the rich will live and the poor will die. Doggone, I mean the panic is on. Can't get no work, can't get no pay. Unemployment getting worse every day. Nothing to eat, no place to sleep. All night long, folks walking on the street. Doggone, I mean the panic is on. All the landlords done raised the rent. Folks that ain't broke is badly bent. Where they get dough from, goodness knows. But if they don't produce it in the street, they go. Doggone, I mean the panic is on. Now, you're the experts at the new Great Recession, so you can help me out with this. I lost my house and my SUV. I even lost my MP3. Now I got to pay those who made me this way, so they can live the screw us all another day. Doggone, I mean the panic is on. I reckon those bankers should have never been bailed. They should be sitting in the county jail. If we do do something by and by, we could use a Swedish model in my time. Talk on, I mean the panic. Oh, socialism, you say? This is a radical group. If we do do something by and by, we could use a Venezuelan model at my time. Talk on, 21st century socialism is on.
I won't be making a trip to visit Tom Blankenship in his prison cell, and I don't wish him well. Won't visit Tony Hayward, he's way too wayward, though seeing him in jail is my holy grail. No, it isn't fine to operate on mine when coal is the cancer of the earth, but to sacrifice 29 to increase your bottom line, brother, you're asking for it. I won't be making the trip to visit Tom Blankenship in his prison cell, and I don't wish him well. Won't visit Tony Hayward, he's way too wayward. Don't see him in jail, here's my holy grail.
All right, well, I have a caller here. I've been listening to Dave Lippmann and a couple more of his fine songs. Hey there, caller.
Hi there. I don't mean to interrupt the music, because those are some really spot-on songs. But no, I just wanted to get an idea across while I have the chance to call in.
Go ahead,
and
Julia.
It's, you know, when we were listening to that last caller, she was saying something about the dichotomy between, you know, families first and, you know, homeless rights issues. And I would just like to present the really simple idea that those ideas are not mutually exclusive, that there are homeless families, that there are families of, you know, people who are drug users who belong to families, and that we need to have a fuller idea of what our humanity comprises instead of thinking of a very stereotypical image of a completely, you know, distasteful homeless person who, you know, ruins society by his mere presence. We need to have a more full idea of what it is like to be houseless, especially in this economy when, you know, the wage in Santa Cruz cannot support housing, cannot support basic needs. The basic $8 an hour wage is a joke. And so I just wanted to present that idea that homeless people have families too, poor people have families too, drug users are individuals, they're humans.
Yeah. Can't be denied. But do we want that kind around our town? Know what I mean? I mean, after all, they're distributing needles. They're throwing needles all over, along with that needle exchange. They're all throwing needles at us.
Well, I would encourage proponents of Take Back Santa Cruz and the needle hysteria to look at some scholarly articles online you can access that have to do with harm reduction models through needles, and great research coming out of the Florida University. They did a critique of San Francisco's needle exchange, and they've shown really promising things in the last, you know, 10 or 15 years of its functioning for reducing the amount of needles on the street, number one, reducing the incidence and prevalence of blood-borne pathogens. And, you know, there's a lot of really promising information in harm reduction models, so...
Well, we don't need no stinking studies. I mean, I've got needles on my street. I found a needle. You want my kids poking their feet with needles? You crazy woman?
Yeah, I guess I'm crazy. But also, one more thing, not to interrupt, I know that there's a flow going on in this broadcast, but mentally ill people are also human. And I think it's really easy to pigeonhole the mentally ill houseless person as just a crazy wacko. But the reality is that our society doesn't really have a safety net for persons who are mentally ill, especially if you're mentally ill and low income. That's kind of a fatal combination. And ending up on the street because of untreated mental illness is a pretty pretty common result. And
well, they're just off their meds. We need to goddamn shoot them up with some meds and stick them somewhere. Know what I mean?
Yeah, just stick them somewhere. Stick them where you can't see them, and then we can live in a completely sterile society.
Well, how can you run a business? I mean, come on. They come into the shops. They cause trouble. You know, I mean, you just heard one of the callers, you know, they threaten people with their fingers.
Well, you know, for as long as there have been people, there have been mentally unstable people, and for as long as there have been societies, there have been poor people, and I don't think that's anything we should, like, you know, gripe about it. Our society can do better to provide safety nets to these people, to have maybe less competitive societies where you don't need to. There was a study done that says you need to make about $35 an hour to comfortably live in Santa Cruz. I mean, and you know,
$35 an hour, is that really true? That's quite a high hourly rate. I thought maybe, you know, $16 or $18 an hour, but where do you get that figure from?
That was a UCSD professor of, I think, sociology. She put out an article, or not an article, rather an editorial, but she quoted that number, and I can't remember the source that she was quoting, but it was some sort of, like, quality of life index.
Well, I think if the minimum wage is $8, or the minimum wage, the standard wage is $8 an hour for, you know, the peons that do all the work on Pacific Avenue. It doesn't matter whether it's $35, $25, or $15. People don't have it, you know.
Yeah, that's the real linchpin of it. And, I mean, certain, you know, San Francisco City and County, they raise the minimum wage to $10 an hour. And Santa Cruz has comparable rent prices to San Francisco. Yet we're still expecting people to be able to afford housing at $8 an hour, and it's just pretty ludicrous.
And the merchants, pressure campaign, destroyed a campaign to raise the minimum wage here in Santa Cruz about 4 years ago.
Oh, wow. Well, that's another feather in the cap.
You know, but it's interesting. I think the previous caller would probably agree with a lot of what you say. And
yeah,
I think, you know, and I mean, her, I mean, you don't, you're not in her situation. I don't know what you, what do you do during the day? You're not downtown in a fixed location where you are, you know, essentially a forced audience for whoever comes up the street and wants to wander into the store.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm not, I wasn't calling to criticize the previous caller's call, because I thought she would get a lot of really thoughtful things to say, and I definitely agree with her. I just wanted to, not from a critical point of view, but just from a kind of observatory point of view, I just wanted to observe that the idea of family, the idea of mental illness, the idea of drug abusers, these ideas can exist in one person. You can be a family man who is mentally ill and has a drug problem, and you could also be a, you know, you could live indoors with that combination of events.
Most do, actually. Most
yeah.
do. I mean, that's the case. Is it okay if I identify you by first name, caller? Or are you a little wary
sure.
of that?
I think so, I already said my name, but yeah.
You did to me, but we weren't on the air. And so, Julia, you are a Food Not Bombs worker as well. And so you're out there every Saturday at 4 o'clock down at the steps of the post office slinging salad and other num-nums. Have you found there's more difficulty getting food donations? I know one of the things that was done in San Francisco when Food Not Bombs started serving homeless people more regularly in a clearly political way, challenging the mayor's of, you know, indifference or abusive behavior toward homeless people, they cut off food supplies. In Santa Cruz, that in the past has been tried against Food Not Bombs as well. Have you experienced anything like that in Food Not Bombs recently?
Well, just to start out, I'd like to say that I don't make it down there every Saturday because I have afternoon work shift, and so unfortunately I don't get the feeling of, you know, how we're being received. But my cohorts say that there's always a warm reception around 40 or 50 regulars. I think we need to get more involved in this conversation right now with you know, the public safety committee and all that. I really think that we should advocate more strongly for what's going on. So we need, you know, we need more people to be on the ground. And I'm looking forward to the next couple weeks. I'm a Cabrillo student also, and so when I finish my semester, I'm really looking forward to doing some more work, you know, more literaturing, more, and just kind of take a stronger role in what's going on. More advocating, maybe at like public safety meetings or city council meetings, to kind of bring a dissenting voice. And, you know, it's not like we're always disagreeing, but I think a lot of times these really simple conclusions are drawn in that public safety debate, and it could be really, really harmful for our community in the long term if we, you know, if we're so committed to, like, cleaning the entire town, quote-unquote, of undesirables. I'd be pretty afraid to actually live here as a person.
Well, I think, you know, cleaning the town of undesirable landlords, bankers, and military personnel, and also abusive police officers is a great idea, frankly.
Right on, yeah.
You know,
I agree with you there, too.
But
yeah.
And I think, you know, cleaning the town of abusive policies toward ordinary citizens is a great idea with respect to how government treats ordinary people. But, you know, that's not what's on the agenda of these committees. And the problem with going to their meetings, the problem with going to city council meetings is it's a rigged deck to start with. When
yeah.
you walk in, you're dealing with a bunch of right-wing clowns, and you always have been dealing with the same people. They got different labels. They're progressive, they're Democrat, they're Republican. They call themselves different things, but they all represent, unfortunately, the same interests. You can see this nationally with Obama and Bush and Clinton. They do pretty much internationally the same kind of shit. And
yeah.
the policies they will oppose when they're out of power, all these Democrats screaming about Bush and surveillance, they're suddenly 100% for and defensive of when you know, their particular political hack gets in power. So we need to establish independent groups that are, I think, promulgating real true solutions and mobilizing people around, which essentially is what Take Back Santa Cruz did, and that's why they're so powerful and so effective. See, that's
right, yeah.
You know, so not that I'm doing that, but I'm sorry, I went on. What are your thoughts, Julia?
Oh, I mean, I'm with you on that. I think that there's a lot of work to do right now, and I think that getting through to a more mainstream audience is important, because I feel like this conversation becomes so polarized when you look at, like, what the Sentinel is saying, or, you know, even the New York Times published an article that said something about how Santa Cruz's weirdness was causing crime, and maybe we shouldn't be so weird. I mean, that's a far removed but very influential news source, the New York Times. And for them to be commenting as if there were a public safety emergency, and as if it was brought on by, you know, kind of fringe-minded people, that speaks a lot to where people are kind of getting their information from. So I think that some of the work right now is finding those appeals, and that's why I'm a really big advocate of, like, looking at, you know, university research that talks about needle exchange, seeing what, you know, even people up at UC Santa Cruz have to say about, you know, this public conversation, because people tend to, you know, have a lot of faith in institutions, so why not use that?
Yeah, some do. Thank you for calling in, Julia. I'm going to try to start this TJ Magallanes interview and see what folks think about that. And also, I'm 20 minutes late in putting it up, but I appreciate your calling in, as well as the previous caller.
All right. Well, thank you for letting me be on the show. Okay, have a good night.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
And you're tuned to Free Radio 101.3 FM. I think we finally got TJ all set up. Again, as mentioned before, if you want to see if you can't sit through a long verbal interview, and I often get impatient listening to stuff like that, though sometimes I find it interesting, you can read not this interview, but another long interview with TJ by Jeremy Leonard at the Santa Cruz Patch website, in which TJ talks about why he felt he was forced out of the clean team, which he says he founded, and ultimately out of Santa Cruz by threats and hostility and hatred and a group with an agenda. Other people, in response to this article, wrote into contesting this. The entire comment stream disappeared. Brad Cava, Santa Cruz Patch impresario, claimed it was because it was a technical glitch, and could well have been. But also, this was really all about a video that Jeremy had also posted, which showed, as I mentioned before, clean team member abusing seriously, directly, and clearly a camper on their so-called cleanups, which is something I've always suggested is a real possibility and has been claimed by homeless people at different points, and has never really been repudiated in terms of, I've always asked, for example, Take Back Santa Cruz to tell its cleanup team people not to disturb homeless campsites. And whenever I've raised this, I've gotten people denouncing me, but not agreeing to do that. And according to Steve Plaich, who's a member of Save Our Shores, they do cleanups, and they are always carefully doing that. I don't know if that's true either, frankly. I've never been on either of their cleanups. But anyway, let's hear what TJ has to say. The quality of this recording is mixed, so be patient, and I will try to adjust it properly. You also have to do a little adjusting of your radio. And I'll take a break sort of midway through for some comments, because it's a fairly long interview. But let's begin.
Okay, I think I've got it here, TJ. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, well, let me introduce you. It's it's the 13th of May, and it's around, 4:15 on the Pacific Coast here. But I'm on the phone with TJ Magallanes. Hey there, TJ.
Hey, how you doing, Robert?
I'm good. You're in Pennsylvania, yeah?
I am. I'm in out here in the beautiful countryside of Pennsylvania.
Huh. Relatives, or what's the deal there?
It's my girlfriend's family's place out here. We're doing helping them build a new addition on their old 200-year-old farmhouse. So yeah, that's fun out here.
Huh. So the reason, of course, that, you know, I guess you got in touch with me is you got an email from me that I wrote you this morning after reading a Santa Cruz Patch article that had a particularly vivid video that I guess, is that a video that you took?
No, I was I was actually out of the state when that video was taken, and I actually haven't really seen the video. I watched it, but it didn't have sound when I looked at it, so I don't really know what was said in the video.
Yeah, the video is, for those who don't know and who are listening, is a video of some folks, supposedly from the clean team, sort of walking around a campsite in which there are several sleeping homeless people covered up with sleeping bags, and one of the clean team people or people in that group starts poking one of the people in the bag with his long stick and sort of denouncing them as unclean and messy campers and so forth. Not that the campsite is terribly clean. But, you know, I saw this video a week ago when you could actually, the faces are obscured, intentionally obscured with little sort of distorted circles. You can't see the faces. But you could hear the voices. Now, however, with the new video that's been posted, the video has been put in, so you can't, it sounds distorted, I think intentionally, to protect the identity of the person talking, particularly the person who's so down on the homeless. People that are there, but I guess the question I have, since you're not really directly connected to this video, but you did in fact, you take responsibility for beginning the clean team, yeah?
Well, yeah, you know, I definitely take responsibility for starting the clean team. Where it has gone since I was, unwillingly, my group was basically hijacked by some other people. So what ended up happening was, I can't really take any responsibility for anything that has gone on with the clean team since I've, have unwillingly relinquished my third
fourth box. Got to lose it.
Okay, sorry about that. That was people letting me know the time I got to get on my airplane.
No problem. No problem. Who hijacked the clean team and when?
I don't want mention any names, but basically what happened is I had some admins on the site, and they basically just removed me completely from, the control of the site, just due to, some of my views on things like the prison industrial complex and, the way mental health is being dealt with in this country and so forth. And, I guess I have some pretty progressive views on a lot of things, and I guess a lot of people just aren't ready to hear it. So
what
basically, anything I was posting was being, for the most part deleted. And I guess it's just everybody keeps their own. Everybody has opposing thoughts and different thoughts on things. And mine did not jive with some of the members of the group. And they, basically kicked me out of the group I started and took it in a different direction.
So when did this happen?
Oh, a month ago. Must have been 4 months ago.
And that was, what, January or so? Or?
It must have been, I can't believe this was in February.
You think it was February?
3 months ago. Yeah, it must have been 3 months ago.
And when did you, you learned that you were no longer the administrator of the online clean team website?
It must have been, it's been a while. It's been since, it was never my intention for the clean team to go out and clean everything up around town, and it wasn't really, the homeless issue was not an issue that I was, there was a lot of opposing views going on there. And, my take on things is, the war on drugs has been unsuccessful. There's no doubt in that. And, most experts agree that it's not a winning battle. And I, in my opinion, I believe we're, it's time to change the approach that we've been taking. And, a lot of people, I think, are just not ready to accept, reality as it is.
Well, I know that you and I talked about your original group, Support Your Local Lurker, concerned with theft on the, in parts of the west side. And then when you and I spoke at City Council, I think it was in December, at a public safety committee meeting or thereabouts, you told me you had stopped that group because you felt it had been taken over by people whose views were, correct me if I'm wrong, anti-homeless?
Well, in a way it was just hateful. A lot of these messages I'm getting from a lot of these Facebook people, they're not real people. You get a lot of these, I guess some people call them trolls. It's just kind of a fake person on Facebook, and I was receiving a lot of just downright hateful messages, and I just didn't really want to be a part of it. I'd gotten some other messages from friends of mine, you know, concerned in the direction that the community was heading, and, you know, I just felt that it had run its course, and it was no longer something that was going to be good for our communities.
Are you talking about? Are you talking about the support your local lurker or the clean team?
The support your local lurker. It was basically called support your local lurker.
I'm sorry.
And, you know, I started that kind of in response just to the massive amount of theft on the website, and the fact that, you know, we had at the Digital Institute, we had video of, you know, people and, you know, who would come through and steal stuff and, you know, trying to break into our studio and our in our school and. You know, I myself multiple times have caught people in my house in the middle of the night. And this is getting a little bit out of hand, you know, just because of in my opinion, it's the lack of mental health services as well as the lack of rehabilitation services in the area.
So, let me continue this, because I've got some other questions I'm going to ask you, but one of them is going to be, and I guess I probably have the answer before I ask you the question, but you may have a different answer about, you know, have there been any positive moves around increased drug rehabilitation services or prevention services or, you know, new approaches to the drug war? I mean, the answer, as far as I'm concerned, is no. They've gotten even worse. But
yeah, pretty much.
I don't know. You know, I mean, I know that they have these new groups now that are being essentially they're endorsed bigotry groups. The citizens. What I call, this is my perspective, what's called the public safety, I call it the public hysteria citizen task force, which is made up of appointees by Mayor Hillary Bryant, and is, you know, cops, ex-cops, merchants, Seaside Company employees, Take Back Santa Cruz members, a couple of social service providers, but and no homeless advocates, and no homeless people. And no drug addicts at all. You know, you'd think you'd want somebody who's, you know, been through that whole process to be able to, or is out there now, who'd want to be, you know, involved in that situation. So there's also the Public Safety Committee, which is posing new rules for new laws to criminalize homeless people, triple fine zones for being in parks after dark, criminalization of people standing with a sign on a median, stay away orders from parks after you get a ticket, but even before you're convicted. These are the sort of nasty laws coming around the bend as a consequence of organizing by groups like Take Back Santa Cruz and, unfortunately, the Clean Team. That's the sad truth.
Well, you know, this is trouble usually starts out as fun.
Mm.
And, you know, at first I really did have a lot of fun cleaning, you know. I felt like I was able to do something, you know, by coming up with a way for people to document sites where we're having, you know, huge, I mean, these are toxic waste sites. I mean, I was finding meth dumps. I'm finding, you know, all kinds of just really environmental hazards. And what I really wanted to do was, you know, take care of my home.
Uh-huh.
And the original thoughts that I had and the original way that I wanted to be was we weren't going to be doing the cleanups. I mean, at first, a couple cleanups I felt like was a good idea, you know, to kind of gain awareness of, you know, exactly what's going on out there. But ultimately, what I wanted to do was be able to help provide services to people in need. And unfortunately, I don't feel that that's what's been going on.
Nope. Did you and Ken split? Because I talked to Ken Collins a bit, and, you know, he's very passionate about this issue, or was when I, it was about a month ago at City Council, I think, that I, or even longer, that I last spoke to him. But did your views on his diverge on this, or did he hear about your predicament with these death threats, as you described them? And I probably should ask you more specifically what you mean by that.
Just on multiple different forums, I kind of received, basically, threats, you know. People saying, if they see me in the street, I'm going to get beat up and all this stuff. And as far as he's with Ken is my great friend of mine. And I'm actually, you know, he's very vocal, but he's also very, he's just as passionate about Santa Cruz and about, you know, I really think that, you know, deep down, Ken is passionate about everybody in Santa Cruz.
Mm-hmm, sure.
And when it comes to the, when it comes to the, you know, the drug use in Santa Cruz, I mean, you gotta, how do I say this right? Basically, you know, I don't think he's out there really trying to villainize anybody. I think he gets emotional because he's kind of in the trenches. Mm-hmm. You know, he's out there looking at this every day. He's got kids as managers. He's got the poll. His kids have his junior guards program and a lot of other stuff. And, you know, ultimately what he really wants is, I'm positive, he wants more rehabs. He wants rehab to be available for people. And, you know, as far as, like, you know, splitting with Ken Collins, no way. I mean, he's been a friend for a long time, and I don't give up on my friend ever. And I really think that ultimately, you know, he is very vocal about things. And, you know, a lot of people might think he's, you know, there was an article, he's the angriest man in janitors. But I think ultimately, you know, I see a lot of similarities between the passion of you and the passion of him and the people who are actually truly passionate mm-hmm. about something.
Well, I guess you know, my question isn't really whether you split with him. I've got friends I really strongly disagree with. But the question is, are his views now different than yours, and is that one of the reasons perhaps for the parting of the ways, in the sense of, not in terms of friendship, but in terms of political direction or, you know, working on a particular project? I mean, I don't think he's abandoned going around with the clean team. I haven't heard that he has. Maybe you have. I don't know.
I don't actually think that he is really involved in the clean team too much anymore, to be honest truth.
Oh, you would know. I've heard than I. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that, you know, like I said, there was people who took over the group, and they're very vocal, and kind of, you know, they're, I think there's a lot of biased opinions out there, rather than objective educational viewpoints.
Biased opinions, and, biased opinions, without naming any names, such as what opinions are you speaking of?
Oh, just, you know, a lot of people out there think that we need a lot more cops, a lot, you know, harsher sentences and all this stuff. And, you know, if we look at history, that hasn't necessarily been a successful route to take.
Well, you and I also talked about, you know, campgrounds for homeless people, toilet facilities. These aren't things I think that the people who are, at least I'm hearing at City Council and at the other meetings, want. They're not pressing for these at all. They're pressing for what you just said. You know, tighter restrictions, more
exactly. And it's really unfortunate. You know, I've been saying it for a while, we don't need more cops, we need less robbers. You know, we need to, if we have people that are having mental issues, we need to help these people. If we're having people that are struggling in life, we need to help these people. And, you know, desperation leads to dependency. And as people get in these desperate situations, it gets very hard to get out of the situation. And, you know, a lot of times, you know, a lot of us, you know, who've been in a desperate situation in the past, we have friends who help us, and we have family that helps us. If we don't, if these people don't have, you know, a support group, you know, they're pretty much on their own.
Now, let me ask you this. I mean, the last time I heard you talk at City Council, I don't think I was even there, I think I may have seen it online, you were attacking the homeless, what I call the homeless lack of services center. They call it the homeless services center. And so I don't know whether it was you or Ken Collins or 10 other people who were dismissing it as a drug den. You know, I've got other criticisms of the homeless lack of service center. I think drugs are omnipresent in modern society, and as you and I both agree, medical solutions and other non-criminal solutions are probably the best way to deal with it. Otherwise, you get a huge black market, yada, 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 and all that, you know, stuff you and I have talked about for decades, I'm sure, and gotten nowhere.
Yeah.
But, you know, the homeless lack of services center being attacked as a drug den, it's like coming to the city council and shaking needles in their face, when in fact you have 719 needles, which the clean team found, compared to 250,000 needles turned in, you know, to the needle exchange. But the needle exchange got closed down because of the actions of Take Back Santa Cruz and the Santa Cruz City Council, running in, you know, in a cowardly fashion from the fears raised.
I mean, I was at the first deal meetings, and I was appalled. I was absolutely appalled.
What appalled you?
It was just the fact that people wanted to close it down. I mean, I feel that a good needle exchange that was run well is absolutely, I mean, you got to practice harm reduction. And I think if you, I mean, I'm definitely worried about, you know, the spread of disease, you know, the rampant spread of disease, drug use, you know, addiction tears families apart, tears friendships apart, And it ruins lives. And by completely dismantling, there is no doubt in my mind that the data exchange has gotten to a point where it was, you know, there was not really a lot of real management. But unfortunately, I can't really, I applaud the people for trying because, you know, they're doing this on no budget, no help, and basically just trying to help people.
See, I'm wondering what the evidence, Ken, I'm wondering what, I mean, TJ, I'm wondering what the real evidence is about this mythology of no management of the SOS, I think, is, even though I've heard it echoed by other people who, in other respects, I have some regard for, like Steve Plage, it's not, you know, to me, finding 719 needles when you're running around pouring through old helmless campsites, you know, and places where people are hiding out because they have no place to go, does not present a major crisis or indicate there's anything really wrong other than underfunding with SOS.
Well, you know, that number 719, that's the documented needles found by the quiz team. I had sites when I was cleaning up 100 needles a week, you know, just right up off of Soquel Drive behind one of my job sites. I pulled out, like, I didn't count, but an entire bleach bottle full of needles. And the next week, I had a whole other bleach bottle filled.
So how much would you estimate, how many needles would you estimate you actually found?
Myself?
Yeah. Well, then you can estimate how much have been found by, in your estimation, by this, you know, various collections.
You know, in my travels and in my, you know, directly found by me, I would say I probably found enough needles to fill up a cooler. You know, a big cooler that you can take to the beach.
It could be, how many would you say?
Oh, geez. I can't really guess the number. I can just guess the volume. You know, maybe 2 5-gallon buckets full.
And I mean, I'm trying to get an understanding of how many needles that would be as an estimate.
Oh, jeez.
Give me a while.
I couldn't give an accurate estimate unless I actually had a...
I mean, are we talking...
5-gallon bucket. I mean, you can imagine, I mean, 2 5-gallon buckets full. Okay. I don't know how many needles it fits in that, but that's about how much I've...
Are we talking like...
myself.
Are we talking dozens, hundreds, or thousands? Let's put it that way.
Multiple hundreds, at least. No, I would probably say close to, you know, in the realm of myself, 600 to 700. I know that the clean team themselves have cleaned up, I don't know, like you said, 719. But myself, I've picked up about 2 5-gallon buckets full. And I haven't, in the last, you know, 3.5 months, I haven't picked up any, so...
Yeah, well, that may be because people did such a good job of cleaning up and because, you know, people are, you know, getting more worried about the issue because it has been raised to such a level of, some would say awareness, others would say hysteria. I've got, you know, there's nothing positive to be said about improper distribution of needles, but let's say, would you say 2,000 needles would be a fair estimate of how many needles people have found in the last 4 or 5 months?
You know, it's hard to say. You know, I really can't put an accurate figure because I don't know how many people, you know, how many are found independently by people.
Okay.
I haven't paid close attention to what's been found on any of these cleanups and stuff.
I understand. Well, let's leave that then because, you know, but even if it were 2,000, which is 3 times the number that the clean team estimated, and I don't think they're in the, you know, in the market for understating the case. But let's suppose, maybe, I'm surprised they didn't mention the 700 that you might estimate that you cleaned up.
They weren't documented, so they didn't really count, you know.
Well,
to me, it's not about the amount of needles that are being picked up. It's the fact that there's not rehabilitation services for people to get into
easily, but
that's what worries me. Is, you know, we can get people food and give people needles, clean needles, and all this stuff. But
I agree.
Ultimately, people need housing and people need an available rehab. And a lot of people argue that they gotta want to go to rehab, but you know, without the option, I mean,
I don't disagree with you. But the point is that the claim that there's a huge number of needles has resulted in the shutdown of needle exchange, implementation of a whole bunch of anti-homeless legislation, and the appointment of 2 vigilante task forces. Well, 1 task force in the Public Safety Committee, which is, you know, hopeless anyway because it's got these city council characters on it that are otherwise inclined. So what's important for me to understand and to put out accurate information on is
For example, this whole attack on SOS, I don't feel, is accurate at all. The idea of a strict one-to-one, for example, is not the best practice, according to needle exchange experts across the country that I'm not an expert either, but what I've read. You know, that's ridiculous.
I agree.
You know,
I agree. I'm not sure that one-to-one
is
the best option, but, you know, trying to please everybody is the hard part.
Well, the point
is trying to come up with a compromise somewhere between, I think, is where
you don't want to please ignorance and prejudice. You want to do what's the best practice. If the best practice is to give away no needles, you should give away no needles. If the best practice is to give away more needles, you should give away more needles. The best practice, in other words, you should do what has in fact been shown to be effective in A, reducing disease, and also B, reducing, you know, improper needle disposal. So I've been seeing,
that's why I put up Gorilla Sharp boxes. You know, I was out there.
How many of those did you put up?
I'm finding a massive amount of needles. I'm putting up a sharp box just saying, hey, you know, when you're done with your needle, pop it. And, you know, I'm not getting mad at people for being at it.
Yeah, how did that work? How many did you find a lot of people use those boxes?
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. They were, like I said, it was filled up within a week, a bleach bottle. You know, a bleach bottle a week was what I was pulling out of one site that was right across the street from Shopper's Corner.
And so there was cooperation between addicts and this, you know, this disposal service that you created.
Well, not at first. You know, when I first, I didn't mean to confront the guy. I just kind of wanted to talk to him because, you know, he was behind one of my job sites. And, you know, there was needles everywhere back there just getting tossed around. And I'm asking the guy, I was like, hey, have you been throwing needles back here? And then he asked me, he's like, do you have a clean needle? And I'm like, no, I don't have a clean needle. And, you know, he started, the guy was kind of belligerent. I think he was probably needing a six or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. He ended up throwing a bunch of stuff at me over a fence. I was actually able to kind of talk to the guy when he was in a better mood. Mm-hmm. And
did all the needles in the bleach bottle he picked up later come from him, or were there other people that also used?
Oh, no. This is a shooting gallery. This is a spot where, you know, I don't even know how many people. Obviously, one person isn't going to use, you know, 100 needles a week.
So that's how many.
There was a lot of people up here going in there. And I probably saw five different people. And I don't know what was going on there at night when I wasn't there. This is just during the daytime. And this is, you know, starting from about, I don't know, 7 in the morning until 5 in the afternoon.
So this was, again, a way you were kind of using the Vancouver solution for Santa Cruz by creating it on your own. By giving, you weren't calling the cops on people for shooting up. You were trying to provide a safer situation where they could do it without improperly disposing of their needles, right?
Exactly. Like I said, I'm not here to attack the addicts. I'm here to prevent other innocent people from getting stuck and possibly contracting, some sort of disease. Although, you know, in reality, it's very...
These representatives... We had a tape break here. That's right. I've repaired it now. Sorry to any listeners.
It was like doing the wishes of the only community.
And we're going to pause briefly. You're listening to an interview several days ago with DJ Magallanes. I think he's a... Wasn't he a surfer dude in some in respects? I don't know a lot about his background, but I know that he has been front and center in the news, certainly a few months ago, with the group called the Clean Team. You're tuned to Free Radio 101.3 FM. This is Freak Radio. I'm Robert Norris, and the name of the show is Bathrobes, Beers, Broadsides. And the call-in number here is 427-3772. I'm probably giving too much publicity to issues that are not really important public safety issues, and that's something that one always has to be careful of when you're doing this public media stuff, because it's tempting, you know, to jump on board these bandwagons or to say, don't jump on board these bandwagons, but by saying that you emphasize the bandwagon and you focus on it, and there are better things to be focusing on. But since I'm focusing on it, let's focus on it. And perhaps you want to focus on it, too. If you got any thoughts on what you're hearing, if you have any reactions, if you've been using needles outside, or you have friends who have, If you have been following this whole controversy in terms of our homeless people getting having a tougher time in the last few months, if any homeless friends of yours face threats or brutality or harassment, or is that itself a mythology, something being spread by self-interested homeless advocates who simply want to distort the situation and malign our fine police department or create more jobs for themselves or whatever they are trying to do, whatever we're trying to do. I'm one of those homeless advocates, an advocate of civil rights anyway for homeless people. Give a call if you want. 427-3772 is the call-in number. And I'm going to take a brief musical break here and give people a chance to react to and respond to and supplement or criticize or commend anything that's been said in this interview with T.J. Megalanis, who's currently in Pennsylvania. SOS, for those who know, I think it's Support Outreach Services, which is the Volunteer Needle Exchange Group. We've actually had some of them on the air. Emily Auger, I think Penelope Jernberg called in. And you can read some of their thoughts, their analysis about why, you know, a strict one-for-one needle distribution, meaning you don't get a needle unless you bring in a needle, is a very good approach. It actually is seemingly far less effective, both in stopping improper needle disposal and the spread of illness. But for those who, you know, kind of use what they call the common sense approach, hey, give out more needles, you're going to get more needles hanging around, you know, and Santa Cruz gives out a lot more needles than San Jose, therefore, so forth. But doesn't really deal with the issue of the fact that needles don't just come from needle exchange. They come from pharmacies where people buy them. People can, you know, I guess, reuse dirty needles. And I guess, I suppose there an argument could be made that said, well, you know, let's let them reuse their dirty needles and die, and they'll sort of get rid of the unfit population, the eugenics approach to the whole thing. Save us medical expenses, although we'd probably have to pay for the hospitalization and the funeral. But eventually, it's like, you know, letting all those gays die of AIDS, you know. It's appropriate punishment for their sinful, their bad choices, their abusive... This, of course, is horseshit. It is a form of demonization of people that is... It's the favorite of sort of neo-fascist groups and a neo-fascist mentality that likes to... It sees the enemy, it wants to see the enemy in sort of a local lurkers, to use the phrase that T.J. Magalanes used when he initially set up a website that was Report Your Local Lurker. And one of the problems I see, one of the things that kind of, well, disturbed me, that I noticed when this whole issue was brought up in the video of the harassment of homeless people in these clean team expeditions, at least this particular expedition that was on the video, was that so many people just didn't want to address it. They wanted to deny it. That's not our guy. You don't like Take Back Santa Cruz. We're a different group. It ain't us. So it's you know, oh, you're you know, T.J. Megalanes is a bad character. He's an egotist. Not, very little about this is horrible. This isn't good. This isn't what we're all about. We're going to make sure this doesn't happen again. If it's happening now, we'll make sure it stops. The harassment of homeless people on these clean team or Take Back Santa Cruz expeditions, if that's what's been happening. But of course, see, that's not, I got to say, it's my impression, that's not what Take Back Santa Cruz and the clean team really are all about. They are all about getting rid of homeless people, transients, counterculture people, hippies, poor people, deadheads, you name them, you know, no thanks. And one way to do that, initially the whole strategy was to blame people for a bad business situation or bad behavior downtown. That, while it wasn't illegal, it drove away the shoppers or drove away families. It's a fire hazard. They're having campfires out in the wilderness. It destroys our quality of life. Broken windows. It creates a situation where there'll be more crime because it looks so sordid to start with. We can't, you know, we don't have this visible sordidness. Then, of course, that's hard to sell because it's It's horseshit, even though it's the official policy of the Santa Cruz Police Department. It has been for two decades to use this so-called broken windows crime theory that somehow that a homeless person is equivalent to a broken window. And so when one window gets broken, you gotta immediately repair it or remove it, or else more windows will get broken. So if one homeless person, is sitting on the sidewalk, that's going to produce other kinds of crime in that area. Actually, I think the opposite is more likely to happen. The presence of a set of eyes on the street is likely to make real crime, like assaults or rapes, less likely, because people are watching. Even if they're lower class people, poor people, quote, mentally ill or alcoholic or whatever, but they're people. And that's the thing to remember at some level. But what's also frightening, I don't really feel fear. Maybe I'm just kind of become numb to all this. But what bothers me is when this video goes up, the pressure then forces the person who put up the video, Jeremy Leonard, to take it down. And I've been trying to encourage him to put it up again. But, he's battered by all this abuse that he's been getting, apparently. I haven't, I can't verify it. I just know what he's written me on the emails. And I know what he said online. You can see some of that in the article I've written on Santa Cruz Indie Media. He's not, he doesn't want to be, a punching bag anymore for simply trying to raise a dialogue. I don't even think he wants to denounce Take Back Santa Cruz. He talks about things like groupthink and the difficulties of what happens in a group when there's, when dissent is kind of crushed, which is what a lot of people are saying is the case in Take Back Santa Cruz. I don't discuss that issue so much because I don't expect groups to be democratic. The Democratic Party is hardly democratic. The Republican Party certainly isn't. The Green Party, I haven't seen, actually is either. These little groups become little power centers for the elitists who happen to go there or who started them or who have taken them over. And I don't expect anything different from such groups. But what I do notice is what these groups are pushing, what issues are important to them. And that's why I've been so critical of Take Back Santa Cruz and the Clean Team. So I'm not terribly, I guess it's people who have been part of Take Back Santa Cruz and found their views suppressed or ignored or been kicked out because of their views that get upset and, start posting, what kind of crap is this? This isn't a democratic process. I regard these folks as kind of naive. And it would be easy for me to say, yeah, what about that Take Back Santa Cruz? Why aren't you democratic? But, I don't know how democratic the group I'm in, HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, is. I'm accused of being, the iron Fuhrer of the group, the sort of stifler, the censorer, the so forth. And, when I deal with people on the radio, I'll cut them off at a certain point if I want to move on with what I'm doing. I will make those decisions myself. And groups, that can also be the case. But the issue to me is not so much that, but it's interesting the kind of fervor and vehemence that Take Back Santa Cruz supporters dismiss this discussion of, even the lack of internal democracy, apparently, according to some, in Take Back Santa Cruz. I'm not going to suggest how any particular group should order itself. People will organize themselves the way they do. But if they are tolerating kind of a mob hysteria, which is, I think, what is happening not just in this instance on the video, but is also happening in terms of the measures that Take Back Santa Cruz is pushing at City Council and the kind of glorification of the police that they're pushing and the enraging and inciting of citizens to do, quote, positive loiter-ins, where they're loitering essentially as a challenge to people who are panhandlers and what they call drug dealers. People selling $20 bags of marijuana, or I don't know whether they're $50 or $100 bags now, I'm not sure what the going prices are, on a street level in order to either survive or engage in capitalism of a black market kind. If you want to look for toxic drugs, go to your local pharmacy. If you want to look for toxic drugs, go to your local 7-Eleven and check out the liquor and the tobacco sales. It's not really a public safety hazard. It is more these scruffy looking people in my neighborhood who are making me aware of poverty and are also rudely using public spaces in ways that I don't like because they have no housing and because they feel they have a right to be treated just, you know, with the same kind of respect as everyone else, and they don't get it, or they're, part of that respect includes access to food, water, and shelter, which some people feel is a privilege that has to be earned. Others feel is a right that shouldn't be denied anybody. I'm one of those. Anyway, I mean, it. You have a whole set of priorities that are created, and these are the differences between people on the right and people on the left. And the problem, I kind of hope these sides would come together and recognize the larger forces in the military, around the banks, around the large corporations that are really crushing and sucking our communities dry and turning us all against each other, against homeless people, you know, against Latino people, against minorities of all kinds. It's just stupid that we're fighting each other this way, but we do. And, you know, that's why, in a certain sense, I'm very sympathetic with the first caller who called in and talked about divisiveness and divisiveness and, you know, polarizing. But I'm also all about clarifying the issues, and if that means polarizing things to clarify that we're following false leaders, that it's mythology that about this bogus, this public hysteria masquerading as public safety, then I'd be happy to polarize, because I think that issue has to be made clear. It is this poll, not that poll. It is this situation, not that. You know, and you've got to recognize what the facts are. I don't hear anybody calling in, so I'm going to play the rest of this interview with T.J. Magallanes. But you can always call in. There'll be another break briefly before the end of the show at 8 o'clock when Uncle Dennis will come lurching into the studio with his bottle of ale, probably. We can find out what ails him, so to speak. Yes. Well, let's get quickly back to T.J. Magallanes. And again, I recommend you look at the interview on the Santa Cruz Patch website. That interview is called, along with a lot of the comments that follow, Fever Pitch, interview with Santa Cruz Clean Team founder T.J. Magallanes. And then again, I've posted a story on Santa Cruz Indie Media, video of Take Back Santa Cruz-supported Clean Team harassing homeless forced off Internet. It's kind of a long, somewhat confusing title, but there you have it.
I think we're proceeding. Let's see if this works. How long were you able to kind of maintain your own needle disposal service? For how many weeks?
Oh, I don't know, maybe 4 weeks.
And
until I finished that job, and then I hadn't gone back to check. I left it sitting up there on the fence. You go back across the street from Shopper's Corner and look behind the storage bin there. It might still be on the fence there.
Huh. So what did the clean team think of your, did you tell them that that's what you've been doing?
Yeah, and you know, at the time, everybody was all for it. And, let me get that, not everybody, let me get that right, let me switch around. A lot of people, progressive thinking people, were all for it. And some people were, you know, I don't know what their views were.
Well, you probably found out what their views were when you were removed from the administrative status, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, everybody is like, oh, you're an anarchist. You want to legalize all drugs. And in reality, no, that's not what I'm looking for. And what I'm trying to do is really treat addiction for what it is, which is a medical condition. And I really feel that until we start doing that, there's no way we're going to make a dent in the needles. There's no way we're going to make a dent in the trash. I think, you know, addiction go ahead.
You and I agree. I mean, we don't have any dispute on that. The question, though, I'm trying to understand more closely, and I know this is probably a sensitive subject for you because you want to draw the community together, not push them apart. The problem is certain groups in the community have gotten a very strong prejudiced voice that is very toxic to the, I think, to the interests of the community as a whole, but also particularly to homeless people. I mean, they are pushing for measures that are going to make life difficult, that are probably going to increase, I would say, even the mortality rate of homeless people. And I don't just mean people who are addicts. you know, because when you put people in situations
yeah,
like
absolutely.
That.
So
I think it is appropriate to essentially try to give as much detail as you can where you feel comfortable doing. Have you had much contact with the clean team and Take Back Santa Cruz in the last few months?
You know, I have not had any contact at all with Take Back Santa Cruz. The Annalisa made it very clear that I was in no way associated with Take Back Santa Cruz or any of that stuff. And
what didn't she like about you? We're talking about Annalisa Cube, right?
Well, it was while we were at the very first Needle meeting, and what I did is I put down my phone and I recorded the meeting, because that's what I do. I'm a businessman. I want to be able to go back, and I don't want to sit there and take notes.
Uh-huh.
I want to be able to go back and, you know, listen to how it was.
Uh-huh. Did you tell her you were recording or not?
And what happened is everybody was talking over everybody else, and everybody's fighting, and everybody, like, people who hadn't done any research on any of this stuff are coming up with their own ideas about retractable needles, one-to-one exchange, and all this different stuff. And, basically what I'm looking at is, okay, well, what's the best way for harm reduction?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, some of the stuff I said was, hey, you know, we need to put up drop boxes. And there's no denying it. If there's no drop boxes, how can we expect these things to get in, you know?
Did that idea fly?
Well, it did. I'm pretty sure the city has been putting up drop boxes. it flew with the city. I don't think it flew with, you know, certain members of Take Back Santa Cruz.
Was that a meeting of Take Back Santa Cruz you went to, or are you talking about the clean team, this meeting where Annalisa...
No, this is a meeting that I went to with the county. And actually, the second meeting I went to had, you know, people from the police, and, you know, there's a lot of different groups.
That was the one
you took
the recording of? I'm trying to be clear about this. The one you made the recording of was with what group?
There was multiple groups. There was neighborhood groups. There was Take Back Santa Cruz. There was people representing the clean team.
It was a public meeting.
And I myself, I didn't represent the clean team when I went to these meetings. I said, hey, I'm just a concerned community member.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going in there trying to lead the clean team. And that really was never my goal with the clean team.
I was to have some group that was running
around doing stuff. All I really wanted to do was be able to let people know and garner attention that there is a lack of services for, you know, for addiction and for homelessness.
So, I guess the question I have is, this was a meeting between city officials, the one that you said Annalisa got upset about, that was a meeting between city officials, or was it just an internal meeting of Take Back Santa Cruz? What was it?
It was a meeting at the Emmeline Health Center.
Between who?
Between the county health services, the head of Santa Cruz Neighbors, a couple other, and mostly people from Take Back Santa Cruz.
And when was this meeting?
Oh, geez.
December, November, January?
It must have been December or November.
Mm-hmm. And who called the meeting?
You know, I'm not sure. I was just sent a bunch of emails asking if I would show up.
And did others know you were recording the meeting?
I told them at the end, and then there was a huge shitstorm, so.
What did you do with the tape?
I kept it. I asked that I erase it, and then actually at the next meeting, there was actually a person representing the city saying that she is going to be recording because, you know, legally you can record these things.
Yeah, of course. I mean, if it's a public meeting, it's a public meeting. I mean, you can get some flack. Is it possible to get a copy of that tape?
Well, out of respect for all those involved.
The reason I suggest it is not out of disrespect for the people, but this is a public policy issue. And it's important the community know the steps behind the current situation. And if this was done through undue pressure by certain groups, the community should know that. You know, I don't think it should be concealed. I think it's and that evidence is in these kinds of discussions, I think.
Oh, absolutely. Well, you know, the thing for me is I'm a man of my word, and I, out of respect for some of the, because I respect some of the people, you know, I respect everybody who's there. I mean, obviously, I respect everybody, but, you know, I told them that I would not share it, and, you know, I got to stick by my word, just because I That's just the way I am, you know.
Well,
I wish I could, but I, you know.
Yeah.
There was nothing that was really accomplished in that meeting. And all it really was just a lot of, you know, people talking over each other. And people trying to shut down the needle exchange.
I think that's important because that's what happened. The needle exchange did get shut down. Public safety has been compromised because of this group. And while I have, you know, respect for your word, I would encourage you to, you know, to think about it again and to, if necessary, contact the people that, you know, you gave your word to and said something to the effect of, look, I'm sorry, this was a public meeting, you were talking in a public place, and the community has a right to hear this conversation, particularly since it's resulting in vigilantism against homeless people. People are getting beaten up here, you know.
And you know what, I was absolutely appalled when I heard that, and I, you know...
Be more than
one of the
appalled.
Reasons, one of the reasons... Yeah. Why I, you know, I mean, the main reason that I was up about, you know, just spying on the cake, like, you know what, these people can spy over this place, you know.
Right. What I'm saying is, though, that those of us who do live here and have friends who are outside and vulnerable because of the bigotry and the political power of certain groups of people need to have something to fight back with. And what we have is information and truth. And unfortunately... The truth, and that you're doing a little part of that, you know, discussing some of this now, does expose kind of what went on, at least from your perspective, in a limited way, you know, for sure. But actually,
yeah.
But I mean, actually, the you say that the county recorded this in the next session that they had.
Yeah, they did, and actually. At that point in time, after the next meeting, what ultimately I thought was going to end up happening was they were going to install drop boxes and try to figure out a way to get the drop boxes reinstated. I in no way had any idea that the needle exchange was going to be closed down. I know that they wanted to move it from its location on Barson Street over to the county health services, but you know, in the beginning of this whole thing, I went into a meeting, a public safety meeting with Bernal and with... David Travis,
mm-hmm.
And I brought a zoning expert with me, someone who's been in zoning for 50 years, and I really wanted to tackle this problem the right way, and unfortunately, they didn't allow my zoning expert to speak. They didn't know, they basically just talked at us for their, you know, the little bit of time that they allowed us, and nothing was accomplished.
What did you want your zoning expert to tell them?
Where the best location would be. Put it in exchange.
And what were his ideas about that?
Well, not in a residential neighborhood, that's for sure. Close to downtown, close to where most of these people would be.
What was wrong with the Barson Street location? I couldn't find anything wrong with it. I know people who live there. It's not that it was a bad location. It's that some people are hysterical about needles. Others have a political agenda that wants to use needles and crime as an entree into political power and also drive out poor and homeless people and further gentrify the area. So, I mean, what was wrong with the Barson Street location? I don't agree with you that residential areas are necessarily bad areas. Why do you say that?
Why do I say that there was a bad area there? I mean, I really didn't have a view on the subject of where it should be at that point. I didn't think that it should be shut down. I mean, ultimately, I really thought that it should have kept going and been given money to... I mean, I wanted there to be a way for people to get into rehab. And
there is no rehab. Come on.
No.
There's no real rehab for the vast majority of people. So that's a nice idea. You and I agree. We need to end drug criminalization, yada, yada. But let's talk about what we can do right now about this current situation is really sort of what I'm working on, and I appreciate your advising me on this. But, you know, I notice, you know, you yourself seems to have been, and many people have, I you know, tend to get swayed by this mob mentality, which is, oh, you know, it shouldn't be in a residential neighborhood. Why the fuck not? I mean, it worked there fine for 10 years. You got no report of drugs, of crime rates raising during the needle exchange period. You had no reports of needles being improperly distributed at that site. You know, you have crime in that area for sure, but nothing that particularly related to needle exchange other than one report by one guy at city council that I remember. Do you have any other information that would be helpful?
I think you're right on that, actually. I think it was one person who was complaining about it in that area.
So one person shut down...
And I think that it became an issue on Take Back Santa Cruz, and there was a video or something released, I think, of them getting their supplies and stuff. And I think what that is it's the continuation of people who are very, very set on the idea that the criminalization of drug use and stuff was the only way to solve the problem.
Yep.
Which, was, you know, history has shown has not worked, unfortunately. So I don't think those people were ready to accept that, you know, treating addiction as a medical condition and not a crime. They just weren't ready to accept that.
Well, I don't expect Annalisa Cube to accept my views or your views. But the one thing I damn well don't want to happen is to have the city pick up the bigoted views of some people around her that will result in a health and public safety crisis, even as they ramble on about this being a public safety measure they're doing. That's what's so really pisses me off so big time about this whole thing. It is such a topsy-turvy, upside-down, Alice in Wonderland approach to the whole thing, which, you know, it actually is doing exactly the opposite and is creating the very safety crisis that it's supposed to be solving. And
I don't think they're solving it at all. I mean, like you say, I think that it's making it worse, honestly. I think they're putting what is it, $16 million or something into a new off ramp and a new shopping center. And why are they doing that? I don't know. They're wasting. I mean, came up with a proposal that came up with $14 million a year in labor accessing and helping homeless people, and nobody wanted to hear it.
No, tell us about that.
What was that?
Tell me about that. I want to hear it.
Well, basically what I have is, you know, if we have 3,000 homeless people, and if I could get half of those people housed, and half those people are housed, and I can get them volunteering service, you know, 4 hours a day, and then for the other 4 hours a day, they would be, you know, hopefully doing continuing education, they'd help just get themselves on track, you know, just giving them, you know, having a safe place to be, and getting them off the streets so they're not in this constant state of purgatory, you know? And, but basically, so we get all those, basically I get 1,500 people working 4 hours a day doing volunteering. What that does is that would help pay for, you know, if we imagine we pay them, they're not necessarily pay them, but their services are worth, say, $10 an hour, right?
At least.
You know, they're picking up trash. They're doing it's not highly skilled stuff. But as they go through these work programs, I think there's a lot to be said to the dignity that is instilled through a hard day of work.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, it's not like there's any companies out there that are going to hire people that are, you know, in that situation. And until we're able to help restore dignity, how could we ever expect to tackle the problem?
Well, you know, I hear all this stuff about dignity, and I'm a big fan of dignity, but I also think I'm a big fan of what you talked about earlier, which is housing. Seems to me that you got homeless people mainly because there's no housing, and that is the one thing, for example, that's missing from the homelessness study session from 1 or 2 weeks ago at the city council. They talked about, people got fired from their jobs, or, they have drug addiction, they have family problems, but not the obvious thing, which is that the system has created, you know, essentially housing and circumstances for well-to-do people rather than for the necessities for everybody that are basically needed. And if they don't get, if people are not being provided those necessities here, they'll just send the jobs overseas, you know, and do it there, make their money there. I mean, it's crazy, but it's sort of, you know, I think, and I don't have a lot of stats about Santa Cruz, and I shouldn't be talking because this is your interview, TJ. What else would you like?
Hey, you know, no worries, buddy. If we have 3,000 homeless people, we have to at least try to house half of them, you know, at least and access these people, you know, and let these people regain their dignity, give them a job to do so that they have so they feel like they're earning their place to stay.
Are they? Are you coming back to Santa Cruz, by the way? Are you coming back to Santa Cruz?
Oh, that's the plan eventually, yeah.
I mean, are you not coming back in the near future? Are you coming back straight away, or?
Not the next few weeks, no.
Okay, but you feel safer now than you did when you left?
You know, to tell you the truth, I never really felt too unsafe. I mean, I got some threats and stuff, but ultimately, you know.
So you didn't leave out of fear of physical safety. You felt that the project in which you'd embarked was just not working the way you'd hoped, and you just sort of turned to something else? Is that one way of putting it?
I think mind, ultimately, is, you know, I felt that there was so much anger and hate in the area that I didn't want to be a part of that. And, you know, I know a lot of people are very passionate about the new basketball team and all the stuff that we have there. You know, I really think Santa Cruz needs a basketball team. You know, sure, why not? But do it right, you know, and don't do it before we have clean water. And I just felt the priorities were kind of mixed up to Santa Cruz. It's got awful expensive to live, and what's the point of spending a huge amount of money to live in a place that you don't feel that safe? We have to worry about people coming in your house at night.
So for you, there is a real public safety problem that you feel needs to be addressed.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I don't want to bring it up without, I mean, sure, it's probably going to cause some issues, but, you know, for instance, you know, the guy who shot those police officers, you know, I feel the system is broken. That guy should have never, you know, he was a violent offender, a sexual offender.
Yeah.
There's no reason that he should have been back out on the street. I mean, and...
The military
that whole tragedy, I really felt was an avoidable tragedy.
Well, you know, I hear you, but it seems to me that it's really easy to look at some high-profile, shocking incidents and draw a lot of, you know, conclusions from them that aren't necessarily one way or the other. I mean, you know, there are plenty of murders all over the country and plenty of real crimes, assaults all over the country. Santa Cruz, relatively few. You know, I mean, you did.
It seems like it's more important when it's police officers, at least according to the people of Santa Cruz and the government. They have
experience
and everything. And,
no, it's more important to the police department. You know, it's more important to those who like to, you know, hollify those people and make them into, you know, the heroes of the world. Butchie Baker was no hero. I can tell you that right now, and I can bring forward 10 homeless people to tell you about his heroic activities. That was some years ago, but I'm not aware that he really changed much. I haven't talked about him in a critical way because, you know, he got shot. You know, and there are plenty of homeless people who die every year, but you don't hear shit about them. So I think it's wrong to draw conclusions from... This tape recorder's got to go. Sorry, folks who are listening. I have a cruddy tape recorder.
I got to get you an MP3 recorder.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, if I can ever learn how to use it.
Great. I mean, I have one on my telephone, actually. It works great.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm just, you know, stuck in my old ways, I guess. Anyway, so you think there's a real public safety, putting aside... So other than the Sharon Collins, the three high-profile, well, actually four if you count Goulet, killings, the guy that the police shot, I know there's been an increase in bicycle theft, and you talked about break-ins at your place. But to me, I hear the words public safety and I think horse shit. But I want to be fair about this and I want to be accurate. Forgive me for being foxish. But, you know, what actual, I mean, I don't see a rise in crime stats, so that could be the case.
The public safety for me was not about crime at all. That wasn't even the safety I was talking about.
No.
I was talking about the safety of the cleanliness of the water, the fact that the water is filthy and unfit for human contact, and that's the reason why most of us pay to live in Santa Cruz is to use the water. We want to be part of the ocean, and that's why we live there.
Mm-hmm.
And that, to me, was the public safety hazard. The fact that there was massive amounts of garbage and all this other stuff getting into the ocean and gets into the food supply and all this other stuff, that was the safety hazard. The crime and all that other stuff, I mean, it's not like we have the hugest amount of violent crime. I know a lot of people say the statistics do that, but I've never felt particularly unsafe in Santa Cruz. I think the times that I feel unsafe is when I'm out at the clubs or something, you know?
Is when you're where?
Maybe out at the clubs, you know. I feel more unsafe going down to a bar downtown than I do... You know, walking by the homeless service car.
Oh, yeah, for sure. You know, we've been talking with TJ Magalanes, and TJ, I'm going to hope this tape actually worked. I may have to ask you to try to do it again on the air at some point. But I appreciate you taking time to do this, and I'll give you a chance to sum up anything you want to say or add something you like to answer a question that hasn't been asked or something like that.
Yeah, well, you know, I guess in closing, ultimately I feel that Santa Cruz is a very beautiful place. I don't think people come to Santa Cruz to do drugs. I think people come to Santa Cruz because it's a beautiful place, and it's a nice place to be. And I think that to really find a solution to these problems, we're going to have to think outside of the box. We're going to have to think outside of what we've been doing for the last 25 years. I think that we're going to need to move in a direction that has not been gone in yet. I think we're going to have to start... I think we're going to have to... Sorry, I'm here at a place getting ready to leave here.
No problem.
I think that ultimately, you know, we're going to need to move in a direction where we treat addiction as a medical condition, not a crime. And I think that we need to take care of the people that need help. And until that happens, I don't know that anything's going to change.
Well, it sounds like, you know, you are actually beginning to do that on a private level, not so much taking care of people, but, you know, trying to take care of the neighborhood by providing, you know, an impromptu Sharps container that wasn't a Sharps container, a bleach bottle. You know, you were trying to do that, and you were doing that in a non-criminal way. You weren't saying, oh, they're coming here, call the police. You were doing, here they're going to come, they're going to keep coming, here. And you talked to the people, and you actually got them involved in this, as I understand it. Is that accurate?
Oh, yeah, I know, absolutely. And what I was trying to do, ultimately, I was trying to help people. The reason why I was so concerned about everything is those people that I've known for years that I wanted to help get to rehab. And it just wasn't happening. It was impossible.
Right.
And that was the brick wall that I was up against. And that was, without that, I don't think, you know, there's no way to help these people.
Well, you were helping people by trying to get themselves to organize on their own outside, engage in a safe needle leased disposal. And maybe, and you know, I don't know about getting clean needles. So you never didn't give the guy a clean needle, but at that time, needle exchange was still working and available for people. No longer. I mean, you've got, you know, the county doing it, but you have to go in and register, and you have to, you know, go in.
It's very demoralizing.
It's unlikely to get the same, I think, response from addicts who are afraid of being hassled, frankly. But I don't know. I mean, maybe they'll jump at the chance of, you know, getting on a list. I mean, I doubt it, you know, but I mean, you know, that's what, you know, supposedly some people think is safety, and the same thing is being done now with the Homeless Lack of Services Center. It's being pushed. They want to ID people going to the Homeless Lack of Services Center. Yeah, what's his name? The killer of Sharon Collins, or the guy who was, who supposedly stabbed her. I assume he did. I actually talked to two people who saw him, so he must have been the guy, probably. Everybody uses the Homeless Lack of Services Center. They need food. You know, they sometimes need a place to stay, and they won't find that there. And they need access to a laundromat, which they might find there, and maybe a mailbox if they can pay for it. And, you know, maybe a drug connection if that's what they're looking for. And frankly, people outside who medicate on themselves, it's kind of not my thing. I wouldn't do it, or maybe I would. I don't know what I'd do if I were outside. So all I know is, though, that, you know, cutting off those kinds of services is a way of fulfilling a different kind of agenda that has nothing to do with really dealing with either crime, public safety, or even rehabilitation. Having made my speech, you may make yours. Do you agree, disagree, or...
Yeah, I think ultimately...
But unfortunately, there are musical things to be done on Free Radio, and Uncle Dennis is the man to do them. Coming up next is From the Cream to the Dregs. I will finish off the tail end of this interview on Sunday morning when I come back at 9:30, unless I find a nice place to go otherwise, in which case you won't even hear the end of this interview. But Uncle Dennis will be providing some free needles, or maybe he'll just be needling you at this.
No, I only put needles on records.
He puts needles on records, and he's on record saying that. So I'll leave this to him. I want to thank you all for listening. Those of you who did, thanks for calling in. We actually had some call-ins, an amazing phenomenon. You can reach me off-air at 423-4833. And you can also probably be stalking around the Food Not Bombs meal on Saturday at 4 o'clock down at the post office. So check me out there. And come on back, 9:30 on Sunday morning. Show will be archived at www.huffsantacruz.org. Thanks for listening.
should I say? All I can do is cry. All I can do is cry. I tried to find why you said go. Now I know. All I can do is cry. All I can do is cry. I keep searching for an answer. As I sit here in my lonely room, till I find a reason to keep living.
Savoy Brown for you there live to start off from the cream to the dregs tonight. Uncle Dennis here in the hot seat. Robert leaves it warm every Thursday night, so I just slide on in and my cheeks stay nice and toasty. We're going to be playing rock and roll, blues, and psychedelic music up until 11 o'clock. We do, however, take a break at 9 o'clock for a half an hour of the Earth First Update. And, of course, the last hour of the show is what we call the Ultimate Vinyl Hour, where we actually take a needle. No, not a hypodermic needle. We take a sapphire-tipped needle, and we drop it in the groove, and we spin that around for you. We got more music coming up. We also have some requests. Don't advertise for requests, but we certainly take them when they are appropriate. So 831-427-3772.
On one-way streets, a taste of